Boom.
It was giving me an error when I was trying to record previously, so
Maybe my Zoom had to die for your Zoom to live.
there we go. Awesome. I have a couple of things on the agenda today. Have a discussion for discussing error handling. That was requested by Jason. Some context provider discussions around our hooks, some time to discuss open PRs and open issues. Are there other things that we would like to have on the agenda? I know there may have been a couple of items that was requested previously that I have not gotten here. Happy to add them to the agenda.
Well, I don't know how up to date everybody is about the developments in AFJ itself, but a lot is happening lately, and there are some really massive PRs that are going to introduce some quite some breaking changes, I guess, for the whole W3C credential stuff. So I don't think I've missed a few meetings also. So I'm not sure if that has been discussed here, but maybe that is a topic of interest. I don't know.
I definitely would find that of interest.
Yeah, it might be good to go over things that we can anticipate that we'll need to change in the wallet, because I think right now we're pinned to 0.20 dash 20.
Yeah, alpha 20, yeah. Awesome. Awesome. And then let's jump in then. Jason, I know you had wanted to have some time to discuss error handling and potentially introducing a bifold error and such. So you want to broach that discussion?
Yeah, thanks, James. Okay, so while working on the wallet, there are a lot of places where we're maybe not catching errors, making some assumptions that things are okay. Those are the little question marks in TypeScript, like this is always going to, well, exclamation mark or question mark. And sometimes around awaits. And I guess this was just to get the conversation of what things should be handled maybe better. For example, there's errors which you might get an error that you don't have a credential that can satisfy a proof. And that one's pretty obvious what to tell the user. There's other places where you try to get a connection, maybe by ID or a credential from AFJ, and a lot of question marks appear, meaning like this is probably going to be here. And I'm curious about the like what's the reasonable expectation of those. Like they seem like they're always going to be there. I'm just wondering under what circumstances we might need to like actually handle the error and check all of those question marks to make sure something exists and then try to do something about it. Because if it ever fails in one of those places, it's nothing the user can really do. I don't know what the user would actually be able to do if something failed there, like shake their phone for a restart, or do we can't, because we're using hooks, there's not a Aries bifold or AFJ, go try that again and get it this time. So like if it's mission, if we don't get credential by ID. So I was curious about some of those. And then yeah, well, why don't we start with that? Like, anybody work on AFJ where we can just get a little up, well, just hear about like how we should deal with the question marks when we access AFJ. So my thought is, like, as a developer, we should check them all and handle them all. Like everything should be checked rather than just allowing a question mark to exist, because if it could come back as null or undefined, then we should probably gracefully handle it because it's going to be a production level application, and things crashing or just misbehaving, the user is just going to get frustrated. So should we do that?
From my perspective, and I'm definitely curious on what Kareem has to say, but I'm I agree with you. And I think using question marks is a beneficial thing because that can help us, especially if we're trying to access something multiple levels down. So for instance, if we're trying to access a property on an object that doesn't exist, that's going to give us problems. And that, so the question mark will help prevent that. However, so I think the most important thing is that we check is our end result that we get from this chain of things that we're accessing, is that returning null or undefined, or is this actually returning what it should be? So I don't necessarily think the use of the question marks is problematic, because that can actually help prevent other problems. But I think we should wrap that all in appropriate error handling. That's my take, at least.
Now you want me to talk, don't you? Okay. So question mark is sort of is fine. It's more like, okay, if this exists, then do something, and if it doesn't, then don't. Exclamation mark, however, is sort of the go-to statement of TypeScript. It is, you shouldn't never ever use that in production, because it basically just tells TypeScript this thing is going to be here. Now, we are using this in AFG a lot, but that has to do with some weird library we're using. So you do want to avoid that. I think like the core issue, or the core challenge, if you will, with AFJ in general, is it's agents talking to each other, and you can never be sure the other agent is going to respond in time, or you can really not anticipate, because someone's phone can be off the record while you expect it to be there, like a connection record. You might say, okay, you know, if we set up a connection, then after, I don't know, let's say a minute, I can assume it's there. Well, you can't, because the phone could be off or whatever. How to handle this from a UI perspective is very interesting indeed. Because I think you had a very good point there, Jason. There is very little the user can do. Like if you expect a certain connection to be there, the user cannot just, I don't know, bash a button like retry. It doesn't make sense. My advice here is completely useless. I realize that, and that is fine. In order to handle things gracefully, definitely don't use exclamation marks. From the error handling perspective, I'd say just inform the user, hey, this is not ready yet, I guess. Now you have to wait.
If I can interject one second, I'll tell you what we were thinking, what direction we were thinking of doing. So I think we're on the same page, which is great. Just, you know, testing the ideas out. What we've done in the app is created something called the bifold error. And it gets thrown through like some state management. It's essentially dispatched because there is a modal which will catch it. And it's going to take a title, a brief description, hopefully something user and user-friendly, not like, you know, red alert system error, which is, you know, it's panicky. And then we've thrown in an error code. Now, we threw in the error code because we'd hope that every time we kind of, like, for lack of a better word, instrument this throughout the code, when that's thrown and caught, it'll display to the user. But the error code, we're hoping that people who actually run this through to production and do some kind of support service behind it, the error code would map to somewhere useful in the code that developers could go back and check. So the idea being, you're using this wallet, it's not getting a credential, or it's crashing or giving you a glitch in some area, you call your technical supporter, open a ticket, and you could use that error code to track it back to somewhere useful for developers to help trying to kind of get people over the hump, because just showing an error message is not overly helpful. But if you have to provide technical support, which we in BC will have to do something for users to call in, we can't just leave them hanging if it doesn't work. So that was our thought with error handling, was some things that need to be user are appropriate to show to the user. then we will use something called the bifold error, which will hopefully communicate enough information for them to either help themselves or get help down the road. And other things will just be the more opaque, error, TypeScript or JavaScript error, which if we can recover, or if it's not going to cause users any problems, then we can just skip over it and do it that way. So feedback, welcome to that idea.
Yeah, so I guess, if we're talking about a connection record not being ready or something like that, there's no reason to, that shouldn't be fatal, because it just means you cannot perform a certain action. You'll have to skip that for the moment, I guess. I guess that's a sort of a useful thing to say to the user, like, hey, what you're attempting to do is just not possible right now. With regards to error codes, Indy has some error codes, which is sort of logical because it's Rust and it needs to communicate their errors to multiple languages and wrappers. And something that I find a pain in the behind sometimes is that I have to do a lookup on a table, like somewhere an error code table in GitHub. I don't know if that is too, well, yeah, I don't know if that's too necessary. Like if you have a really descriptive, not something you user, but if you have a really descriptive message, like we were waiting on a connection, or we were trying to attempt to do something with a connection record, which is not in the state we are expecting it to be, that might do the trick, but I'll have to think about this a little more, I guess. But I don't know if you meant like real codes, like numbers.
Yes, so put in numbers, and it would be the same for technical support. They could look up those codes to find out what help they should do to the, like any advice that can go along with mitigating the error, and at least developers can correlate the error to a specific place that was thrown.
Yeah.
I think that it's useful because generally I think end users communicating the what error is actually being displayed versus what actually had that communication, that's a struggle. And so if they can communicate a number, I think that's going to be smoother error handling. Like I would be interested in having the discussion of being able to have AFJ or error codes associated with AFJ as well, because I think that's a layer that makes a lot of sense for those.
All right, well, we'll carry on this trajectory for now. I don't want to consume the whole meeting with error handling, but sounds like we're on the right path, and we'll just keep iterating and working this through the code to see how it fleshes out.
Yeah, so just to hook into the AFJ stuff, it might be interesting because we have in AFJ a sort of specific, I think, Aries framework error, it's called. So it might be nice to be able to catch that and translate that into a bifold error. So you just have one like error class you use.
I think that would work.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as long as everything inherits from error, which I'm guessing your bifold error also does, it should be all right.
One other idea I want to throw out for just to put into your brain of we may want to be able to handle errors where it's not a fatal circumstance. So for instance, they go to the connections page. Let's say we have an issue loading a connection. If they're able to, I don't know, reload by like swiping down from the top and reinitiate that action, that might be an appropriate space where we don't want to display like an error, but say like have a little bit more fine-tuned control of a little bit more in line to the UI so that's less disruptive and in the face of the user and allow them the ability to retry that action. That starts getting a little bit more in depth and specific, but could be helpful to consider.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess in general, that's also something we're doing or trying to do in AFJ is, everything, if you catch an error, so in this case you would, if you have a connection issue or a wallet issue or whatever and it cannot load the credentials, you would catch that, right? And you would say, okay, you know, either skip it and wait for another user's action or just retry to load it. What I find very useful is to have sort of a middleware thing that just catches everything that is uncatched, basically. So if an error really comes through and it's not handled by anything, then you use that to display an error to the user. Now that is, when you're talking UI, a bit tricky, because you don't know which dependency is going to throw an error, and you'll have to parse that in a way. But at least that makes it's a little bit like a lot of server frameworks work. I think Express does the same. It doesn't crash the server if something goes wrong. Usually, sometimes it does, but it will just return, like if you call the API, it will give you the stack trace. Because it's really difficult to anticipate what all the errors are going to be. And especially in a production app, I think you never want the app to fully crash. But yeah, I'm also just spitting some ideas there. So. But good discussion. Nice.
I think the only places where the app will crash is when it's operations like connecting and receiving or presenting and things like that, where there's nothing you can do to recover from those. But I do agree with things like loading contacts or credentials or anything that has already been kind of is present, then we can sort of gracefully try to handle that.
But if you think about it, like if I cannot, like if a certain exchange fails,
yeah,
that shouldn't be a reason for the entire app to crash. It should be that's a reason for the exchange to fail. But the rest of the app should just say, okay, this action just failed. Retry later. But you know, the rest of the wallet should just be able to continue, because I mean, you might have multiple exchanges going on simultaneously. So
at the moment, we're not actually, there's nothing that causes the app to crash unless there's like something really bad happened. Right now, if there's a failure in some some exchange, what we do is we just tell the user that, hey, this can't do this right now, and that's exactly what we do, is we just punt them back to the home screen.
Amazing. That's yeah, perfect.
Awesome. Any other thoughts on this, or should we move to the next item?
Next item. Enough negativity with all those errors for one day.
Akif, you want to talk over?
Yeah. So I just wanted to quickly get sort of some discussion going, and maybe some insight from some of the experienced devs here about the possibility of passing in the AFJ hooks through a context provider. Like currently right now, we tend to import the hooks we need in the individual components. And so that can increase the number of imports that we have on a per file. And we generally kind of use the same hooks kind of throughout the different components. I'm wondering if it would just make sense to pass in through a provider and just have it available across the app. What's your thoughts on that?
So it's an interesting thought. So, because one of my thoughts here is that one of the benefits of importing the individual hooks is that it gives flexibility to the end developers, because they can use a hook in a component that it's a fairly simplistic API, if that makes sense, for them to just be able to import the hook. In terms of like performance, I don't know if there's too much of an impact there on that. I don't think there would be. I think my next thought being is the React Native hooks package that we're using from the AFJ extension side is, it has context providers. So one of the options here might actually be we in theory should be able to utilize those context providers if we wanted to. I'm not necessarily sure if we would I guess I don't see too much of the negative of importing on each file from my, at least my initial first impression, but that's my take at least.
I do. No, I don't really, but I'd say my argument, which is it sucks, but it's an argument anyway, is that I don't know. I think it's a very common design pattern in React apps or React native apps to have a context provider. Because if you wrap your app around it, it's available everywhere. So to turn your argument around, James, is like, I don't see why those hooks shouldn't be available throughout the whole app, because you're probably going to do some state stuff. It might be interesting to look at performance, because I have no idea either.
Yeah, we could maybe do like a spike on our team to figure that out, like if we changed it to use a context provider, because to me it almost just basically it sounds like it's a central sort of data store, if anything. I don't know if that's the right analogy. But anyways, yeah, we could try it out. Like one of the things we definitely noticed as we're developing is we use things like the connection information across the app quite a bit, because we want to know information about who is sending what. So that's an example of where we're kind of just using it ubiquitously across different components. So I think if there is no sort of huge negative or sort of reason why we shouldn't try it, I think maybe it's something we'll experiment with.
I'm all for experimentation, and so I'd love to see if you guys take a spike and take a look at it, see what the pros and cons would be, see what the results of that are. So I'm all about experimentation.
Sounds good.
To be honest, I don't think there's going to be a huge performance difference, because I think JavaScript, as it's a perfect language, it always optimizes that stuff for you. Now, like in general, but I don't think it really applies to this use case, is I'd say you want to limit the amount of imports, just because you might end up with some nice dependency cycles. I've been struggling for the last hour to solve one of those in AFJ. But then for the state, it's really a one-directional relationship. Yeah. So you probably don't have to deal with that.
Yeah.
But cool. Yeah. No. Try it out, man.
Awesome. Awesome. Kareem, you wanna tackle the AFJ 020 breaking changes discussion here?
Yeah, I don't feel like it, because I'm very certain I'm gonna scare everybody. this thing is we and not just us, also Northern Block. For Ontario, we've been like working on it's a long process, but we're trying to get AFJ to AIP2, which includes it includes the present proof initial credential v2 protocols, which in itself isn't too bad, but then you also get a new credential formats, JSON-LD or W3C credentials, it's really cool, but it requires a major overhaul of the public APIs. So I think right now, yeah, both PRs are issued, I think. But so it means at least for credential, the credentials module and the present proof module, or the proofs module, the entire API changes, because now basically where previously you just said, okay, do a credential offer and you had all nice like indie types and anon creds stuff, now it can be whatever you can propose. You can either issue one credential in multiple formats, or the one format. So there's a huge change in the public API. So just be ready for that, I'd say.
Is the JSON-LD PR, has that been actually made, or is just the present proof and issue credential?
So this had a little bit to do with sort of the business requirements of Northern Block. So what we did is we first implemented the version 2 protocol, so issue credential and present proof version 2, but only with the indie-based credentials. And so those PRs have been issued, like they're like just Timo literally on one PR left 130 comments on issue credential v2, which is good. So there is some work there. And now we are working on, at least I'm working on adding support for W3C credentials and DBS Plus, all that goodness. But so that is the next step. So we're trying to first merge in just the V2 protocol stuff with just Indie, and then after we're going to do the W3C thing.
And as I understood it, the plan is to have just the Indie V2, the present proof V2 and issue credential V2 using Indie. That's in 0.2.0. And then it's a follow version release with AFJ for JSON-LD credentials.
That's the idea, yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting, because I guess one of the things here is that AIP v2 doesn't directly require JSON-LD credentials. That's one of the sub-targets, is the JSON-LD credentials. So, I thank you for the info. I asked a couple of questions. I guess I might have another question or two, but other people have questions they want to throw at Kareem.
I guess for us is, when are you guys expecting to have 0.20 kind of deployed?
That is a beautifully difficult question. So I'd say, maybe next week, but probably not. So because there's just a lot of this is such an architectural overhaul. I think just the issue credential v2, it changed about 150 or 170 files. So this is really, it's really big.
We don't want 0.20 or 0.30.
Sorry?
Of 0.20 or 0.30, just to
2.0 will be the next, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the problem is even though we don't have JSON-LD support yet, the V2 protocol, just that is why everything changes, because the V2 protocol, the protocols have support for multiple formats. So we need to also support that in the public API. So actually the biggest API change, I think, is going to be, or like public modules API change, is going to be in these two PRs. Because this basically enables that you could later on throw in another format, and the rest is more like low level stuff. So the 0.20 will be a major public API change.
So the reason I ask is because I know that Timo was shooting for March 17th for a alpha version that we would test for the final version release, with the goal of having 0.20 by the end of this month. But that was based off of previous discussion, so you might be a little bit more up to speed on that, Kareem.
Well, I know that there has been some delays in these PRs. I think Northern Block's working hard to get the 130 comments of Timo processed. But then still there is also present proof, which requires, so the end of the month, possibly. I could see that happening, but the 17th of March is, I believe, in 2 days. Yeah, it is.
I have one follow-up to that.
Shoot.
So at the moment right now, we do rely on 020 for revocation. And that seems to be working well right now. And I guess the question we have is if so far we just need to support any credential issuance proof requests and revocation, are we okay to then move forward with the official 0.20 release when it does come out, and then we can start working on iterating towards the V2 protocols? Or are you anticipating that there is going to be breaking changes there as well?
So the next release will have, like, once the because I believe, like, I'm not too sure about the releases and the plans and the releases of AFJ, but I think the 020 already includes the V2 stuff, right? Or doesn't it?
What's currently 020 alpha is what we're using right now. So the official 020 would include the V2 versions.
Yeah.
But not JCPD support, as I understand.
Exactly. So the API changes, because now all of a sudden you have to, when you call a function, you have to tell the module what protocol version you want to use. So we basically had to unify the API for V2 and V1, which just makes that you now have a formats field, and so that will include breaking changes. Then afterwards, so that is basically, we did that just to sort of anticipate on the formats on the JSON-LD we're going to implement later, or we're working on right now. So I think the biggest change is going to be in this release. But after, you just throw in another format, and if we have all the JSON-LD stuff merged, that should be enough to, then we will just internally handle things different. So it's another format. But we tried to do all the really major breaking changes all at once.
Right. So I guess the main thing is we just have to look out for this next release, and then possible some API, some changes to how we access the API in the wallet.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we continue to just use Indy, for instance, in 030, we shouldn't have major breaking changes there, right?
You do. Because basically, I mean, in the public API, we had a lot of like Indy specific stuff exposed, like credential preview.
I want to rephrase my question to make sure we're on the same page. So my thought process is if we upgrade to 020 once that comes out, and we fix all of the breaking changes associated with that, and then AFJ releases 030, which includes JSON-OD support, would we expect any breaking changes for our what we have working with Indy, or would that just be working as expected?
I think not too much. Well, no, not too much, definitely. Like, it could be that we find some stuff like, hey, shit, this is the public API, we need to add this key or whatever. Yeah. But no, I mean, the stuff that works right now, like the Indy, basically what we have now, you have, let's say, the credential service. The credential service usually directly did everything itself, and did all the Indy credential stuff. Now we have the credential service here, and underneath we have an Indy proof format service, and we're adding a JSON-LD proof format or W3C proof format service. So the Indy stuff has been done, and we're basically now just trying to add. So it shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't. Yeah. It's really another line of logic, if that makes sense. I'm struggling with my words, but no major, like it could be here and there something because.
Yeah, that's a major version release, but that's about what I expected. So, awesome. Akif, did that answer your question just to make sure?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're expecting most of the changes to happen in this next release. So, and I don't know what everyone else's use cases are, but I don't know if we're going to be too concerned with JSON LDA right now. I think our main use cases involve just indie credentials. And so long as that works, I think that should be fine for us.
Yeah, I mean, so depending on everyone's use cases, you could also choose to just stick with the current version for a bit longer.
Yeah, and that, yeah. But we also want to move things forward just because this is a shared project. So we don't want to hold it back because of our specific use case either. But I guess we'll see. I'll keep a close eye on the developments and when 0.20 comes out, and we'll have to probably move really fast to get those changes in the wallet, I mean, and then test it out.
Hey, can I offer a thought about JSON LD credentials?
Please do, Sam.
In your design, it's worth considering the ability to hold credentials where you are not the subject. So there's not a lot of work here yet, but one of the really useful use cases of JSON LD credentials is to hold credentials about things. So that are not necessarily a non-creds credentials. So for example, if my company has some certification, it would be convenient for me to be able to hold that works really well as a JSON LD credential because like there's not a lot of privacy concerns there. Which means I might want to hold that so that if someone says, well, okay, so you're employed at this company, like what does the company have? And I might be able to present those credentials. So I bring this up because this is coming. And so if there are things you notice in the API that you could adjust, that would work well. Now, it's entirely possible that the presentation of those credentials, it needs to be different as you're not the subject. Lots of the JSON LD presentations, right? You try to also prove that you are the subject of the credential. And of course, that's not possible when you have a sort of a third party credential in the sense that it's about a third party, not about yourself. So if you run into stuff and you have questions, please holler at me and say, hey, here's the thing. And I'm happy to answer any clarifying questions or anything else. The reason I bring it up now is that it appears we're at a phase where maybe we can make things easier in the future with maybe just a tweak or two.
Well, thank you. Do you know what the state on that is in Akapai?
I have absolutely no idea.
Great. I don't. like Timo and I implemented it and I don't. So that's nice. It's a year ago though. No, but I'll keep it in mind.
I bring it up because it's a little bit uncommon. We're so used to thinking about people credentials that it's a little bit weird to think about other types of credentials. But I think that in the group, you know, people ask me like, well, what's the deal between like a non-creds and like JSON LD credentials? And there's actually really good use cases for JSON LD credentials that a non-creds aren't really great at. And I think that as we prepare to, you know, handle those well, then one of the issues is going to be the fact that, to use JSON LD credentials for what they're great at, that means that I'm not the subject all the time. There will be some where I'm the subject, but there's definitely going to be cases where I might not be. So imagine, and this applies to this project in some ways more than others, because it allows the cave use case. If we're both in a cave, and you know, Bluetooth has been solved and we're talking, you could actually exchange credentials about a third party of this type in a pretty seamless way. And I think that there's some really cool use cases there, including some IoT-based use cases as well, since lots of IoT credentials makes much more sense to be of this type of data than in a non-cred specifically. Anyway, so this is not something to burn a ton of cycles on now, but what I'm hoping is that by having that in your brain, it will help guide a little bit of that work.
Yeah, we'll keep it in mind. Thank you. Cool.
Awesome. Any other thoughts on this? Alrighty. Looking at open PRs, I had any that we want to specifically talk to and or look at, yeah.
I think the, I can quickly rip through these. I don't know the numbers exactly, but one of them's for the error handling that we just talked about at the beginning. It's just, I've got that as marked as a work in progress. And the second one above 42, I guess, delayed wallet initialization, that's from Ontario, who are reworking the PIN creation screen. What this one does is it just moves wallet initialization after the PIN is created, so that the PIN you use can be used to initialize the wallet rather than 123, which I think is the current key at the moment. So it's just to make the key unique to everybody's wallet, and the PIN initialization is going to be some of that input to help make that magic happen.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you for the overview, Jason.
Sounds like a good use case for a PIN to make it unique. Right. Sounds amazing.
I'll take a look at at least this one, and then when this side is good and you give the thumbs up, can also take a look at that one.
Yeah, I think Mustafa from the Ontario team's doing the initialization, so working a lot on that PIN screen. It's still a work in progress. He needs to do a few things to just shore up the automated tests, but I think he's going to keep working on that.
Awesome. We have a couple of minutes left. We can look at some of the issues. I know that I don't remember who it was, wanted to do a little bit of polling here. But are there other questions for maintainers? I know we have a couple of other people on the call, so I want to give time to have people be able to ask some questions before the end of the call. I struggle to wait for multiple Nathans. Okay. Was it you, Akif, that wanted to take a look at some of the issues?
Yeah, I think some of them are pretty stale by now, and maybe we can start closing a couple of the older ones if they're done, or at least if the trajectory has changed.
That makes sense to me. Is there, are there any in particular that you think we would want to discuss on this call, or is this mostly can we go through and call these? Does it necessarily have to be a joint effort, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think maybe we can take that one offline, because I don't think we have a lot of time left on the call, but maybe we can just coordinate and decide which ones we want to. Some of these look like they're still okay, you know.
Yep.
But there's a few to do with things like theming and all that kind of stuff, and I think we've kind of chosen a direction with that right now, so I don't know. And there was a couple other ones there, yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Like update the latest indie SDK, I think that one's been done. That was a while ago. I'm not sure though. Anyways.
Yeah, no, I think this would be good to do. So thumbs up on that. Anything else that we want to discuss in the last couple minutes here?
We could discuss the weather, but I don't know.
All right. It's pretty blue and sunny here, but I think.
Yes, here as well. It is amazing. Everybody is happy all of a sudden. Mental.
I guess one of the last things I want to maybe for a future discussion is, once we're sort of done with our use case here in BC, we want to discuss like what we want to improve on the wallet generally for the community. So we're pushing towards a specific goal for us, but obviously there's things that I can see on here that we want to maybe start implementing as a community. So some improvements to the wallet. So maybe that could be like a future discussion. We could start planning like what we want to add in.
Yeah, no, I think that would be awesome.
And I anticipate that some of it will overlap, but just so that we're pushing towards these sort of common wallet as well as our own goals too.
100%, yeah. Awesome. Well, wonderful discussion today, everybody. Thank you for the awesome thoughts and feedback and ideas. It was awesome. I hope you have a good rest of your day, and we will continue discussing offline and at the next call. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Have a good one. Cheers.